Chris here, I'm the host of the hour. First to follow the fox named Neve, with book slave before the bear named M, to read and retire around the long fire.
After a week off, I have to say, I have no fucking idea what we read 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I remember being kind of bored. One thing I realized is we could look at just what's the Claxton titles, because those chapter titles are long and there's a billion of them. But I truly don't remember much of, the reading, in part because I thought it was boring.
There's a couple things, like I'm looking at my notes and I'm like, there's some stuff here, but it was a lot of, this is the tournament arc, right? That's what happened. That's why.
Yeah. There's big tournament arc vibes. I'm just like not that into Lakote Maltale or whatever. We've had like multiple of this guy now. You know,
Lakote Maltale is fun because it has my favorite thing, which is Sir Kay being just an asshole to anyone he perceives as worse than him.
Yeah, that he's, part
he's
is
like fun. He's like spitting on the waitstaff. That's the kind of guy Sir Kay is, apparently.
Yeah.
You want to be a homie, but he's not a homie at all. He's actually the worst human being alive.
It's great, too, because he specifically says, "My name is Brunor. Very soon you'll know that I come from a noble family." And Sir Kay is like, fuck you. Your face looks weird. Why is your coat stupid? You have a stupid coat. Let's call you stupid coat.
He's called Lakote Maltale, which is ill-fitting coat, because he's wearing a giant gold coat that's all cut up and doesn't fit him. And because it's like his dad's, right? I don't remember.
Yeah, so after Sir Kay is like, let's call you stupid coat, then he's like, well, my dad died in this coat, and that's why it doesn't fit well, because it's cut up from the many places where he was stabbed to death.
Yeah. Anyway, the maiden comes in and is like, I need a knight to quest. And he's like, I'll do it. And she's like, no, you're the guy who sucks. I don't want you to do it. And he goes anyway. And she just kind of berates him, because the thing about him is that he's a fucking terrible horseman. Every time he's like riding around on a horse, he just gets unseated instantly. He can barely keep his balance, whatever. But once he's off his horse, he's just like a beast. Just goes full berserker mode. He cuts a lion in half in this chapter. I did write that down. Cuts a lion in half, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
But can't stay on a horse to save his life. In chapter 41, Lancelot takes Lakote Maltale under his wing, even as he's dealing with letters from Tristram, which is just Tristram going, I promise I didn't cheat on my wife. I swear to God. Lancelot's like, I don't have the fucking time for this. I don't care about wives. I'm Lancelot.
Yeah.
He defeats some evil knights, puts them in King Arthur's service. He gives Castle Pendragon back to Lancelot gives Castle Pendragon to Lakote Maltale, also known as Sir Brunor, is what I have. And then he marries the woman who's been yelling at him, called Maledisante, who they also note is sometimes called Damsel Beau Pensante, because sometimes she's nice and sometimes she's bad, I guess.
Yeah.
But also, so now she's called Beau Vivante, because she's vivacious, lively. I don't fucking know. It's dumb.
Yeah, there's also, I think, I forget if it was in here, if it was when I was just looking up this character. There's also like Bien DeSante. Or no, Bien Pes. Bien
I said
Pensante.
That one.
Yeah.
I said that one, yeah.
Well, that's the middle distinct one. From Beau.
Yes.
Yeah, there's multiple.
In 42, hijinks in the woods. Isolde continues to be pathetic about the other Isolde and Tristram's nonsense. Tristram and Lanarak have an honor off. There's a bit here where Tristram is disguised, because Tristram's whole thing is that he never wants anyone to know who the fuck he is. This is like common on knights. I guess you just want to go incognito, but everyone is being super racist to the Cornish, which is not a real thing.
Yeah.
There's like all these Cornish cowards, and I'm like, nobody cares about this. King Arthur is lured into the forest by a damsel who wants to jump his bones, and it's up to the Lady of the Lake to get Tristram to rescue him. Tristram does that, but again, does it anonymously. He doesn't want King Arthur to know that he's off saving him from getting jumped by ladies. Don't know why.
Yeah. Have we gotten to the questing beast yet? I want to make sure we don't miss the questing beast.
I don't actually remember. It might be in here. I don't know if I wrote down the questing beast. Anyway, a suitor is writing letters to Asode being like, oh, you're so hot and you're not married. Let's get together. And she takes pity on him and writes like one slightly positive letter back just to like make him feel better, not to shut him down immediately. And that letter finds itself into Tristram's hands and it makes him go crazy. And by that, I mean, he literally loses all sense of self and becomes like a naked wild man in the woods.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you married someone else, my guy. You do not have a leg to stand on in this one. He's found and recognized by a dog that he knew. Comes to his senses. King Mark banishes him. And as King Mark is banishing him, this goes on forever. I swear to God, I did not write any of this down. But King Mark obviously still wants to get rid of him because the whole thing where, like, you know, King Mark wants to marry Isolde or whatever. And, you know, wants Tristram out of the picture. As he tells Tristram he's banished, as he's leaving, he just recounts all the good things he's done for King Mark. Like, how dare you banish me after I saved your kingdom and got you your lady and blah, blah, blah. Real sore loser energy off of Tristram after coming back to his senses. 44, Tristram and Lancelot and Le Gawain keep running afoul of misadventures. Morgan Le Fay tries to kill Lancelot with 30 knights, and there's lots of jousting. Palamedes is here. He's powerful. I don't know. 45, more jousting.
Yeah.
Tristram wins renown over 3 days of fighting constantly. Isolde just sent a lady here to get letters from Tristram, be like, hey, Tristram, you need to write to Isolde. She's really upset. And that lady is just like, there's a great scene where she's just interrogated by Guinevere, which is way more interesting than any of the jousting going on. It's not, unfortunately, the focus of the chapter.
Yeah.
Tristram departs before he can be honored. He's like injured and he's like, oh, I can't finish the day, so I'm just going to run away. And then Lancelot like cleans up and everyone's like, oh, Lancelot's the greatest knight in all the land. He's like, look, Tristram was kicking everyone's ass for 3 days. I just show up at the end when everyone's tired and win. You have to give the honor to Tristram. And everyone's like, oh, Lancelot denies the greatest honor we give him. That makes him even cooler. And Lancelot's like, God damn it. I just wanted to have another guy be cool.
Yeah.
Many knights split up to search for Tristram, who's in a prison with, Palamedes. The main story of this is Sir Kay goes to King Mark, who tries to kill him for basically no good reason. And King Mark is like the worst, maybe truly the worst guy in all of this story. He just is petty sucks. For no reason. Anyway, Sir Kay beats the shit out of him and then forces him to make amends with Tristram should he ever see him again, which is very convenient because he's going to be out of prison soon, I think. But he does not. I think he leaves prison. I didn't write this down. I didn't write out that he gets out of prison. So I don't remember if it ends with him in prison or not.
I think at the very end they're freed. I don't remember how,
right,
though.
Because the guy just comes in and says, you're free, right? Because Tristram gets really sick. Isn't that what happens?
Maybe.
Okay, I could grab my book. I just have my notes. Yeah. I could grab my book. And this would solve a lot of problems. A lot of mysteries would be solved if I read the goddamn book. The next chapter, by the way, next week, is Tristram joins the round table. He's
Darius
in prison because he fought that guy's sons. And yeah, because Sir Tristram is like sick to the point where he's like almost dying, he's like, oh, I can't let a guy die in my service, and frees him. And then when he explains that he killed his sons for very good knightly reasons and very honorably, the guy's like, oh, I can't be mad at you, because knights are weird. And he swears the service to that guy. And then yeah, that's it. Then he rides with some knights and they all part and they all go on adventures, which is going to be next week.
Yeah.
Mostly it's a big fuck-off tournament, which neither of us care about.
Yeah. There is a part where there's just an... It feels like a complete aside. Like, I don't even know how much it like, really matters, other than, like, they pass by Sir Tristram.
Yeah.
But yeah, the questing beast just shows up again, and I was hooting and hollering, having enjoyed the random weird appearance of the questing beast and being like, this thing's never coming back. We get more details about it.
You love the questing beast.
It's just so weird, and I like that it comes back, and there's still, like it gives us more details, but it's still really unclear what the fuck the questing beast
really is. I mean,
really
it's really clear
and...
in this that the questing beast is like a nightmare creature.
Yeah, it has the head of a serpent, a body like a leopard, hindquarters like a lion, and the feet of a hart. And then, as we got before, from its belly comes the sound of 40, or this time it says 20 pairs, of hounds on the hunt. And it's also called the beast Gladisante.
Wikipedia says that the questing beast is a medieval depiction of a giraffe.
Weird.
Which is not nearly as cool as the weird fucking thing they describe. But also, it is kind of funny that everyone's just losing their minds over a giraffe and running around England.
Yeah. Anyway, I think like Sir Palamedes is the one who's like chasing it now.
Sure, I believe you.
And yeah, like there's just this aside in the middle of like, it's like literally in the middle of Sir Tristram and Sir Lamorak like talking and doing things, where just suddenly like Sir Palamedes comes in the middle and it's like, I'm chasing after the questing beast, and then leaves. In a chapter where I was, especially later, I got even more bored. But like a section where I was bored, I was excited to get weird questing beast again. I did look up pictures of like depictions of the questing beast. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. I can see how this is a weird understanding of a giraffe.
Yeah.
Somebody's trying to explain that it has a long neck by comparing it to a snake, and then they're like, oh, it's got a snake head.
Yes.
Yeah. This is great.
But yeah, mostly fighting happens, and it's not that interesting to either of us, so.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of like some of the stuff with Sir Tristram, and like the love drama stuff, but it does go on too long, especially the part where he's just like mad, you know?
Yes.
Mad as in like out of his mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm in the, it's still not as bad as, harrying, but I'm definitely in the, like the middle of this being like, I really want it to get to like Grail stuff soon or something.
I mean, we're like more than halfway, so we're on our way.
Yeah. I think this was the tip over in two.
Yeah.
We're now over halfway.
Yep. Do you have anything else about the rating this week, or should we just like call it?
I think we can just call it.
All right. Next week, we're reading chapters 47 to 51. So, there being so few chapters, something monumental must happen, right? Certainly.
Hopefully.
Or there's so much more jousting. People love to joust.
Yeah. Knights and, whatever the... When was it that everyone was doing that Johann Sebastian joust thing?
Oh, I don't remember. 2014.
24. That sounds right.
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, 2013. So the height probably would have been 2014.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sports Friends came out in 2014. So. Yeah. And that's when normal people could play it.
Yes. I was enough in game circles that I was aware of Johann Sebastian Joust before it came to Sports Friends. But
yeah, me too, because I listened to Idle Thumbs.
Oh, yeah.
And the Bombcast, which I think both of them talked about it.
I feel like this is like a core difference between you and me, is that I never really got into Giant Bomb. But Idle Thumbs, extremely.
I mean, I got into Idle Thumbs because of Giant Bomb. I think that works that way. Because I was listening to Talk Radar, which is Games Radar still is around, but it's weird because they're like a future publication, so they were mostly like British, like traditionally, but they had a San Francisco office of like just fucking nerds who had a podcast that back when having a podcast meant you asked your bosses if you could stay late and do a thing, and nobody really knew what it was, right? And nobody cared because no one was watching. And on that podcast, Ryan Davis, I think, guested once, and so I started listening to Giant Bomb. This is like early Giant Bomb, like 2008, 2009. And then I started listening to Giant Bomb, and I think Chris or Jake was on an early, early Giant Bomb. And that's when I started listening to Thumbs.
Yeah. There's definitely some like Giant Bomb, like streams, like video stuff that I saw just as like, being around people who were in a Giant Bomb. But the only Giant Bomb thing that I like actually myself like sat down, you know, experienced was the endurance run.
Yeah. When I got into Giant Bomb, the endurance run was ongoing and was like in the 30s, I think. So whenever that was, is when I got a Giant Bomb probably.
Okay.
Cause I remember when episode 50 hit.
I do remember the first episode of that going live. And me being like, I guess I'll watch this.
Yeah, I stuck with them until basically until the Beast cast ended. Because like once everyone moved to New York, all the people I liked were in New York. And I mostly listened to them. And I mean, I still listen to Nexlander and Gerstmann. One of those I like, one of them I don't. Everyone knows which one's which. I think I like Nexlander. I don't like Gerstmann. I hate listening to Gerstmann every week.
I don't understand why, but go with God.
I have 40 hours of my work week to fill, and Gerstmann puts out a 3-hour podcast every goddamn week. That's the answer.
Yeah.
And sometimes his opinions intrigue me. It's interesting to see what someone who's been in it this long, but is old and tired and a little out of touch, but not in the same way that like Jeremy Parrish is out of touch or I'm out of touch even, thinks about video games.
Yeah.
It pains me to say I'm much closer to the way Jeremy Parrish is out of touch than I am the way Jeff Gerstmann's out of touch.
Everyone
knows my nemesis is Jeremy Parrish. He doesn't know I exist. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
That is just painful to admit to as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I listened to Thumbs until they ended. Both times. I was there when they ended the first time, and I was there the end of the second time.
Yeah. I know I've like tweeted this before, but the me just hoping that Idle Thumbs will come back is I feel like the closest that like I get to people who like believe that Christ will come again. There's just like a part of me that constantly holds out hope. It's not happening, but
it's not happening. I can't talk about any of that.
Yeah.
I might know a few things more than the average person. It's not happening.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really obvious just because everyone's in a different country now. And one of them, I mean, wasn't like any of the major Thumbs, but one of the Thumbs got canceled off the face of games.
Yeah.
Weirdly, it was exactly who you think it would be. Go figure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Now, all those podcasts are dead. I mean, Giant Bomb's still around, but it's a corpse. It's no one. It's like Dan Reichert and six people I'd never listen to ever in my life.
Yeah. By the way, I was going to say the reason why we missed last week.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden just fucked up my evening.
Personally.
So, yeah. I had to work a trade show for my job. Specifically, I had to go around and talk to other booths. My job does not run a booth at trade shows, ever, but like I had to go there because my job is like adding new products to our offering. And there was like a little like happy hour after, and then I was like, oh, I'll, like leave a little bit early so I can like make sure to get back in time, eat some food, like put my kid to bed, and then record the podcast. And then Joe Biden just decided that he had to drive from the airport to the hotel he's staying at, because he was here for some election, you know, campaign thing. And in order to do that, just had to shut down all of fucking downtown Chicago during rush hour. So I was like in a Lyft that moved like a few blocks, in way too long of time. And I was like, can you just like get me to a train? Cause I looked it up and I was like, oh, Joe Biden's just fucked up all of the streets. And then the trains weren't running, I was amused by the operator who was like locking the gates to get up to like the L. And he just said, trains aren't running because Joe Biden had to mess shit up again. But I then eventually managed to get on, one of the trains, that was not the like elevated one, like a subway one. So, but yeah, I got home very late and I was very tired. So I did not want to record a podcast. Like, I got home like in time that we maybe could have recorded, but I was just fucking exhausted. So
yeah. And I love taking days off, so.
Yeah. Also, just trade shows in general are sensory overload. So, after that, and then being like, am I just going to be stranded in downtown Chicago for a while? I was not in the mood to record. But,
yeah.
Blame Joe Biden if you were sad about no episode.
Okay. You met Hatsune Miku. That's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, I did meet Hatsune Miku.
How was the Hatsune Miku concert? If you would like to know the lead up to the Hatsune Miku concert, presented as entirely a gimmick about you actually meeting the real Hatsune Miku, you can listen to Ghost Divers, Pondering Pusan. I would like to hear about the actual concert, not a bit, please. you can keep doing the bit with Connor.
Are you asking me to break kayfabe right now?
I'm saying that this is a podcast where we don't have kayfabe. Yes.
That's true. Yes. It was fun. I forget. I should like look up how much the VIP tickets were. I got a comp ticket. So the whole reason for the bit on Pondering Bhutan, is that in order to get into the concert, I did go up to the will call box and say I am on the guest list to see Hatsune Miku.
That was true.
Which is true. And then they gave me a paper ticket, me and my wife. To go see Hatsune Miku, because, and this is also true, Hatsune Miku, the character, is friends with Pusheen, the character, which is the, like, face, obviously, of the corporation Pusheen that my wife works for. So,
yes.
As
much as fictional characters can be friends with anybody, this is true.
Yes, yes. And so, anybody who works for Pusheen, the cat. You know, got comp tickets if they wanted them. And so I was like, this is not a concert that I would probably pay to go see, especially because just the
fuck no.
The tickets, like when Emily asked me this, the price was like, this is ridiculous. Like I would not pay the money to go see this, but for free, hell yes. So, and we were actually seated, like we were like literally one row behind the VIP seating that you have to pay. Mm-hmm. Like it's like at least $200 to sit there. It does come with like a glow stick and stuff, but it's like not that great of free merch. I saw what the free merch was and I was like, it's not great. it was definitely fun though. I feel like if I paid money, I'd be really disappointed that it was a screen and not a hologram. But I didn't pay money. So I was like, this is fun. I'm looking up the, cause I know the first song was, Miku by Anamanaguchi. And then it was Vampire.
Unfortunately, my VPN is on and Ticketmaster won't let me look at prices while I'm on my VPN. It thinks I'm a bot.
That's fair, at least. I'm trying to see because I know I saw a place had like set lists and I'm sure they've updated it with the Chicago one now.
I just want the price. I want you to tell me the price of the ticket.
Oh, yeah, let me.
I don't give a fuck about the set list. It's Hatsune Miku.
Yeah.
Do the people who make Hatsune Miku music get paid when they are used in the concert? Like all the people who contribute the Vocaloid songs? I don't actually know about how the business of Hatsune Miku works in terms of like who's compensated when.
Yeah, I don't actually know. This is what Miku Expo 2024 Chicago. I don't know if I'll be able to see prices now, but. Whatever. Yeah, I was in the very front of the orchestra. And the VIP was in the, like, section above. But it's not showing me prices now. Well, I can try and look for this a little bit more. But, yeah, it was definitely way more than I would have paid.
You also got the screen, right? Not the...
Yes.
You got the LCD screen that everyone's mad about?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me see. It might be different pricing than Chicago, but I'll see if I can find, like, one that's coming up. But there's still... Toronto one is tomorrow? Apparently towards the end.
Equivalent prices.
Yeah.
If you know how Miku song creators are recompensed for concert use or whatever, or like games or anything, let me know. I'm curious. I could Google this, but I'm too lazy and I won't remember after this. So
yeah. So, standard tickets at the one in Toronto, the ones that you can currently get, start at just under 100.
Yeah. But VIP, that's what I want.
Yeah. Let me filter for, are all the VIP might be sold out now. Wow, the verified resale ones are ridiculous. These are like, some of them are going for many, many hundred.
Hatsune Miku scalpers.
Yeah.
Okay, well, enough of that. Yeah. It was good though.
This says VIP started at 150, okay. Varied by venue and stuff, but
okay. Concert was good though.
Yeah. You know, it was wasn't it just Miku. Most of the songs were Miku, but, Rin and Len came out, Mako came out, what, Megarine? Megarine Luka.
Oh, so, yeah.
And it is, especially, like, as you're just standing there watching the show for an extended period of time, it is weird the way in which, like, because you can see the band members to the side, like, the backing band. There's, like, sort of a, like, fence in front of them, or, like, you know, it is almost like a wire fence sort of thing. Almost the vibe of, like, I mean, there's a way more LED, like, screens and stuff all over it. But kind of the vibe of, like, you know, the country bar where there's the thing to protect the band from bottles being thrown. Yeah, so you can see them playing all the time, but, like, there is also this just giant screen of, like, a glowing cartoon woman dancing around. And at a certain point, your brain just, like, believes that you're watching, like, that person perform, right?
Yeah.
Because you're just there for, like, over an hour and a half. Oh, Kaito is the other one.
Yeah, the one nobody cares about.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're gonna get an email.
It was very funny, too, because obviously the glow sticks that everyone's waving around, yes. Like, you press the button, it changes the color, so you change it to whatever the color is for the character. And so Kaito did a song, and then Mako did a song, and then there's a Mako-Kaito song, and there was so much more red in the crowd.
Yeah, that, so, that checks out.
Yeah. It was good, though. Especially for just a thing I didn't pay for.
Yeah.
It was also just fun because there are so many people in cosplay, which as soon as I saw that, I'm like, this is not surprising. But I just wasn't prepared because my normal concert going experience is so different from this that I'm like, why would you wear something uncomfortable like that? you know? my clothing choices when I've gone to concerts have been like, am I going to mosh here or not? Because if I'm going to mosh, like, one, nothing with like studs or something that could hurt somebody.
Nobody's moshing at the Hatsune Miku show.
There's no moshing at the Hatsune Miku show. I'm just giving you an example of how different concert going experience has been. And like, two, what's something that I don't mind if it gets ripped, if someone like grabs onto my shirt collar while they're falling or something? Right?
Yeah.
I'm not wearing my precious stuff into the mosh pit. So yeah, it was just very funny seeing like full, like, you can't sit down in that. Cause there was, it was like a sort of bigger, like almost like a theater concert space. So there's like the theater seating. But most people were standing. Emily sat, as somebody who cares even less about this, for most of the concert, but the people in front of us were standing, so I stood up so that I could see, you know, Miku and Mako and Luca and everyone dancing around.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel like it was like the two songs were the ones that I really knew, the first two. Miku by Anamanaguchi and Vampire. So I just truly don't go here enough, you know?
All the songs I know are from the games, which I assume are not what they're touring with in 2024. So, yeah, I wouldn't know either.
Yeah, I don't know. I can send you the... Here, it's Setlist 1 was the one that they used for... scroll down here.
See if I recognize anything. Setlist 1, you say. Setlist 1, Miku.
The setlists are mostly the same, but there are like three songs that vary. Because I think some of them, if there's like a local musician or something, they occasionally like work to those in a little bit more.
Like they're playing World Is Mine. That's like one of the most popular. I feel like that is like, if you got to pick a default Miku song, it's one. That's my one of them for sure.
Yeah, there were definitely ones where I was like, I'm pretty sure I've heard this song before, but I just don't know it, you know?
Yeah.
I never got that big into the Miku rhythm games, mostly because there was just a fair number of, like, rhythm games at the time. And I was probably playing, like, Technica Tune or whatever?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, DJ Max. I would say
this set list is not, very little that I care about is on here. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's also fun because entirely animated 3D character is able to go through a lot of costume changes, so that part was fun too.
Yeah.
Gimme Gimme with Rin and Miku, they were all like emo dressed. It was funny. Yeah. Oh, and I guess, there's a note here that for, Intergalactic Bound, there's a part where the normal lyrics are, let's dance with a rhythm from New York to Japan. I guess New York was Chicago. I did not notice it. Yeah.
All right.
I don't think I would recommend people pay to go to Miku Expo. Maybe if you know for sure the hologram's going to be there and you can get like decent ticket price, you know?
The thing about the Miku show now is anyone who probably is into Hatsune Miku probably likes VTubers. And if I was going to pay money to watch fake anime girls dance on screen, I would pay for VTubers.
Yeah.
Because at least then I'm supporting a real person.
Yeah, same. it was funny being there and being like, if there is ever like a HoloLive concert like this here, I would probably go to that.
That I would pay $200 for. I wouldn't travel. Like there's, you know, there's shows in America. I would not travel for it, but I would probably, if they came to Nebraska, a thing that's not going to happen, I would pay money to go see a VTuber.
Yeah. I probably would not travel either unless it was like easy driving, and I live in Chicago. Like the likelihood of them going to Milwaukee instead of Chicago does exist, but is slim, you know?
Yeah.
Detroit's like really the limit. I might go to Detroit, and mostly because I could, like, crash with my parents or something.
I bet it's way more likely if VTubers are going to do a concert in the Midwest for them to do it in Chicago, so I don't think you have to worry about it.
Yeah. But Milwaukee and Detroit are the two other main cities I've had to go to sometimes for other concerts. But yeah, very likely that if Hololive did a North American one, Chicago would be, if it's going to be Midwest.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, it was also very funny because it was just like, from getting into VTubers, I was now more aware of, like, you know, the culture around this, in a way that even like a year ago, I was not nearly as up on, like, you know, glow sticks and stuff like that. I extremely felt like the interpreter for Emily being like, let me explain to you. This is called an Ita bag. things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get the Ita bag culture, mostly because I just don't believe in liking one thing that much.
Yeah. I think that I like Nana enough that, like, it would be a thing that I could make an Ita bag out of, but also just the aesthetics of Nana are, like, you just get a really nice bag and you maybe have, like, one or two accents on it, you know? There's just, like, a different sense of fashion going on there.
Yeah, when I carried a bag that had pins, I had tons of pins and stuff, but they were for all sorts of things, just a rainbow of stuff, and not for, like, the one character that I'm, like, obsessed with. Not how I view my consumption habits.
Yeah. I have a fair number of pins on my denim jacket. And there are, like, I've got, Nana pins where they're, like, in the little strawberry cups, but then I also have, like, some vampire ones. I have one that's just a cat holding a knife, just, like, in its teeth. You know, just an assortment of pins, like the enamel pins. But that was what I did last night. And thankfully it ended before 10, so I got to bed a little bit later than I normally do when I have to drive into the office, but it was not terrible. I've definitely gone to concerts where you're, like, out until midnight, so. But I bet the nerds going to a Hatsune Miku concert are not that kind of crowd, generally. It was also funny because there was a bar there and there was just so few people drinking. And I was just like, man, maybe this is part of why the ticket price is so high. They're just, like, not making up. The venue's not making the cost that they would expect on alcohol. In terms of VTubers, Advent is currently all in Japan.
Yeah, I haven't watched that yet, so I have nothing to say. Yeah. I intend to, but I have not.
I mean, they don't say much there, but I don't actually know. Around when do they get the, like, 3D models?
Kind of depends.
Yeah.
They could be doing it now. It'd be a little early, but not the crazier. The thing is, there was, like, a huge COVID pileup of everyone's, like, production for that stuff. And once it started loosening, everything's been happening way faster just because every VTuber is just bigger. They're a bigger deal now. But it could be that they're getting models made in, like, early tracking for their 3D lives, but those won't happen for another 6 months, right? Like, who fucking knows, right?
Yeah. And in the streams that I've seen since they announced that they are actually in Japan, they have not, they're like, we can't really talk about why we are all here in Japan. So
yeah, could be anything, right? There's just no way to know.
But it was slightly funny to reveal that the whole time that Narissa has been, staying at Shiori's house, they were actually staying in Japan.
Yeah.
The other stuff I have is not related to Hatsune Miku or VTubers. So,
What do you got?
Well, one, so there's a book that I started reading. I'm like, just looking at like a third of the way through. That is, I had like randomly picked this up, because it won a nonfiction award in Ireland and it sounded kind of interesting. And it was like, for some reason, like a friend of mine or something, it was like some book sale for charity kind of thing. I don't even remember what it was, cause this was years ago when I bought it. But I was like, oh, I'll buy this one, just completely on a whim. But I started reading it recently. It's A Ghost in the Throat is the name of the book. By Dear Negriva. It's been a real roller coaster ride. There are some like really good parts in this. It also starts with like a proclamation that this is a female text. And a lot of that seems to be focused on things like, giving birth and breastfeeding and things that, for me as a trans person has just been like a weird, thing to rub up against in the midst of all of this.
When's this book from?
So that's the other thing, is it's from like 2019 or something.
Okay. Yeah. No, you know, you can't be like that in 2019.
Yeah.
This is always the check you got to do. It's like, well, this from the 70s, then I don't give a shit, right? Like, whatever.
Yeah.
It's from 2019. No, stop it.
Yeah, if this was from 1970, I'd be like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. You can have your divine feminine shit that's all attached to, like, biological female things like, you know, giving birth and breastfeeding back then. You can't get away with it now.
Yeah.
It's cringe, and it's signifying a set of politics that maybe you're not even signing up for, but, like, you're aligning yourself with some shit.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Like, I read, like, the first two chapters of this and then was Googling, Dear Negriva TERF. Just being like, can yes. Can I find anything that's, like, clearly pointing to this? Yeah. But, yeah. The main, like, focus of it, so at the very end of it is her translation of the Kina Art Ilire, which is this keen that was written, keens being like a mournful poem in Irish literature, that was written by Art O'Leary's like wife, mourning his death when he was killed. And so part of like the text is focused, like, the main text of the book is focused on, like, her relationship with that poem, why she decided that she, like, really wanted to not only translate it, but then also, like, compile a rough biography, like, as much as she could of the woman who wrote it, which is Eileen Dove Niconal, specifically being, like, there's so little written about her and so much more written about like her husband and like her, nephew, who became a politician and everything. And being like, who is this person who wrote this like poem that's considered like one of the greats of Irish literature? And so there's like that. And then it's also talking about like her relationship, her connection to the poem, why she like, is so attracted to it and like connects with it so much. And then also I think is using this like idea of, you know, these like very, various feminine experiences being like, this is a thing that I feel tied to because like, Eileen Dove was like, you know, the mother of, you know, so many like children and everything. And there's like all these various connections that are being drawn out. And so it is this thing where I'm like, I kind of see what you're talking about with like, at least feminine text, right? Like word choice here. but then there's also parts where I get frustrated where like, it'll be talking about how like, at the time that the poem was written, a lot of texts, like, cause it was in the, let me look up exactly when the, like Art O'Leary. But you know, it was like after like the advent of access to books and everything. For those who don't know, Art O'Leary was a member of, like, the Gaelic nobility of Ireland, who basically, like, fought against the English and was killed by the English. But yeah, the Keen was composed, like, in 1773. We even know the specific date. But apparently, like, one of the things that she talks about is that lots of scholarship on the Keen talks about, like, how there might be things that she's borrowing, because a lot of, like, women's poetry at the time still was, like, more of an oral tradition rather than, like, a written tradition. But then she, like, ties this in just to, like, this idea of the, like, you know, of, like, the connection that all women share or something. And it, like, doesn't take it into this, like, more, like, this is a thing we talk about all the time on Elf, of, like, oh, these poems are exciting and interesting because there's just, like, tons of poets that contributed to this, basically. Like, one person wrote it down. But often, in many cases, they're, like, taking from these other sources, likely oral sources. And it feels like she's, like, not doing the work to tie to, like, the way that oral literature is just kind of generally, like, a more communal or, like, interconnected thing, and is, like, specifically just talking about it as, like, you know, the line of women rather than, like, the other potentiality that's contained in just oral literature in general. And those are the parts where I get frustrated, because it feels like it's, like, so focused on this idea of womanhood. And some of the ways that it's defining that are very biological ways. Especially, like, weird biological ways, too, where it's, like, there was a chance that I could have breastfed. I just didn't get, like, access to the meds that would have allowed me to early enough. But then there's all sorts of ways that, like, that still gets centered as, like, a cis woman thing or whatever. So, I'm gonna stick with it because there's, like, other interesting stuff in it, but I've really just been, like, you know, feeling myself great against these edges of the book. So, yeah. When I first, like, picked it up, I was, like, immediately reading through it, and then when I realized that, like, oh, this isn't even, because the first chapter is, like, titled A Female Text, and I was like, oh, this is, like, going to carry throughout. It's not just the theme of this first chapter as well. My, like, pace slowed down. So, but yeah. We'll see how it turns out. I mean, all the reviews that I see of it are, like, very glowing, but that still doesn't really mean anything. So, yeah. The other thing I have is I can talk about Blue Period.
Yeah.
Or I can save it for Stairwells. We're recording it tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, you made it sound like you want to talk more about Stairwells, and I have stuff.
Yeah, you can talk about stuff.
I've got a whole box of stuff, but I was kind of letting you go.
Yeah. Well, you can talk about stuff.
I watched The Snake of June.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I was so excited when you said you went on A Snake of June.
The Shinya Tsukamoto movie. I picked this. It's funny because I was, like, just cruising around looking at stuff. I was like, ah, nothing on Shudder looks interesting tonight. Criterion just isn't hitting. So I went to Arrow, and they just have, like, a it's not called Asian Extreme. That's a different label, like an old DVD publishing label. That's basically what my brain wants to fill in, something like that. And I clicked through and I looked and I was like, oh, this one seems interesting. It's pretty short, so I'll put this on. And then literally I hit play and I was like, I've been told to watch this movie. I just, yeah. Like, just like you have the thing in your memory drift up. And I looked, I searched our group chat and yes, you told me to watch this one.
Yes.
But I did not know that until I'd hit play and it, like, kicked that up to my brain. And you did was this an actual Stairwells, or is this just a segment one talk about it?
I feel like it was an actual Stairwells, but it truly could have been one of those where it has lived on more than the main movie.
A Snake of June, because I don't want to like go forever if you've already covered it. Oh, searching stairwells is not super easy. The website just works differently than my website.
Yeah. Episode 81, it was in the segment one. So episode 81 is okay. About man with a movie camera. But we also talked about Jade, which is a bad erotic thriller. Criminal Passion, which is a, I think, fine erotic thriller, if I remember. The Bedroom Window.
Yeah, Snake of June and yeah. Gundam F91.
Yeah, and then Gundam F91 also. In there. I was okay. On a erotic thriller tear, and I also watched Gundam F91.
about the things that inspire erotic thrillers, but not an erotic thriller.
Yeah.
Definitely a man cheats on his wife.
Yes. It's classified on Wikipedia.
I guess the wife cheats on the man, whichever.
Yeah.
Infidelity happens.
It's classified on Wikipedia as erotic thriller, and I kind of understand why, but I don't think there's a lot of like thriller nature to it.
So Snake of June, just really, really brief, because maybe listen to Stairwells or whatever, because I'm sure you talked about it for an hour and we're not going to do that, is about a wife and her husband. And she works at a mental health line where seemingly she convinces people not to kill themselves, like just like a suicide hotline or whatever. And she comes home to her husband, who's like a neat freak, who's like, it definitely has the vibe of like, I don't actually think he's that much older than her, but it comes off as older, and he's just like a dumpy guy who's like, well, not dumpy. He's like a kind of like a pudgy guy who, is really uptight and constantly cleaning stuff. And they just seem to have this marriage where like they live in the same house and never talk to each other, basically.
Yeah.
And she gets a call one day from this guy who's like a creeper, who seemingly called into her hotline, and she convinced him not to kill himself. And he's been stalking her, and he has all these pictures of this time that she went out in like a mini skirt and like masturbated in like the street, basically. And has all these photographs that he blackmails her with to try to do the thing from Personal Shopper, where she has to like relive her, like she has to live her fantasies and not live in fear, which in Personal Shopper, we laughed at when we talked about that in Rupture Screams, we talked about how corny that stuff was. And in this, it because it's a Tsukamoto movie, it just like goes from there into like this weird direction where like the first segment is all about this wife. And it's like, the segment is denoted with, like a female symbol. And then the second segment is all about the husband. It's denoted with a male symbol. And the second, the third segment is like the collision of all three of them. And it's denoted by like a trans symbol for like no particular reason, because there's no trans characters at all in there.
Yeah, just for the reason of male and female symbols combined, I guess.
Yes, yeah. And so this is one where like I watched it and I was like, this is really good. I liked it quite a bit. Tsukamoto, I've watched three Tsukamoto movies and they've all been 5-star films. Man does not miss. And I went to Letterboxd, and you know, when I'm on Letterboxd, I'm like, did any of my friends see it? And you and Autumn both put 5 stars. And I checked some, but none of my friends had like written any reviews. So I checked the reviews, and all the reviews are like really like hyper invested in like, oh, the Tsukamoto is so invested in like the degradation of the self and humiliation as a way for personal freedom. And I guess I kind of see it if you like buy the level, like the text level of the movie. But I watched this movie going like, this is a movie about how fucking silly people's horny is, basically.
Yeah.
And like silly in like cosmic, like silly in that sometimes it's really absurd and you just gotta laugh at it, and sometimes cosmically silly and then it will drive people crazy into their own destruction, but again, you just gotta laugh at it, because what are you gonna do? Like, we're animals at heart, and one of our major drives is to procreate, and we turn that into some weird 10th dimension chess about like why we want to procreate and how we want to do that, right?
Yeah.
Because like one of the things in this movie is like her stalker realizes she has breast cancer because of like a picture he took of her with her shirt off, and then she's projected onto her husband because of him being kind of shitty to her when she told him that he doesn't want her to have like the surgery to get a breast removed, so she doesn't do it. But in doing so, it seems to like just push her into this whole like, I'm going to flame out brilliantly with like the last bit of my life worldview. but like both the men in her life are kind of horrified and like deeply attracted to this. It's just like ridiculous. And I don't mean that to dismiss it. I think it's like really good about that.
Yeah.
But it reminds me of when I watch Crash and everyone's like, this is so fucked up. And I'm like, this is a comedy about how fucking weird people are.
Yeah. And with this movie in particular, it truly just feels like it is about how weird and like stupid human sexuality is.
Yes.
Yeah. It's fantastic. I love it. As a person who has a weird fascination with human sexuality, as a thing that I only like partially experience in a way that other people seem to constantly experience, this movie is about the things that I'm coming to erotic thrillers for.
It's interesting because I actually don't feel like that, but I understand why you think that. Because I don't think this has anything to do with erotic thriller. The things I like about erotic thrillers is like the dripping like melodrama of like people put in intense situations with everything on the line. And it's like literally like you've just created your own hells for no good reason. And this movie is just not about that in the same way.
One of the main things that I come to erotic thrillers for, though, is just the like the weird, like self-destructive things that people do for like for sexual desire.
That's fair.
And the bizarreness of that, the way in which like so many erotic thrillers could just be fixed if people weren't horny. Yes. But people are horny and like, you can't just like remove that from the equation. And it just feels like this movie is all about that part.
But the thing for me is like, on some level, like the erotic thriller to me, like is at its juiciest when it's about the ways in which people end up in these elaborate hells of their own making because of that drive.
Yeah.
And A Snake of June, I think, is ultimately about the drive to self-destruction being like a thing that is better than just kind of like not living. You know, like being alive, but not living that life. And not in a super, there was a bit like halfway in where I messaged you. I'm like, this movie is Ikiru, but horny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last episode, we talked about New Rashomon. Now we have New Ikiru.
And maybe it's just because like most of the traditional erotic thrillers come out of like America, and they have the ones I've seen anyway. Like, I'm sure there's a bunch of European ones I have not watched, but I think of like, Basic Instinct, and there's so many are wrapped into like the ideas of like the guilt that the characters feel and the ways in which people who do things that go against society ultimately must be punished for them, like moralism that comes with like American senses of like what is right and wrong, that's all like religious based and bullshit, whatever, you know what I mean. And this movie just doesn't have any of that. It just is kind of weird. It's just that, like, the thing this movie leans into is that people ultimately are unknowable, and you project and you listen. And sometimes you do it with good intent, and sometimes you do it with bad intent. But at the end of the day, there's truly no knowing what the fuck's going on with any other person in the world.
Yeah.
And I just find that, like, it just hits so different to me than like, you know, Basic Instinct is the one I always think of. Because, you know, we'll talk about that on a Arnie and Sarah Wells at some point. Soonish, getting there.
Yeah.
Also just looks great. It's like all tinted blue and it's like constantly raining because the whole point is that it takes place in like the rainy season and the rain is all like, you know, there's like imagery of like snails and like juxtaposed with the rain, juxtaposed with this horny lady and like the like wetness, the eroticism of wetness as an idea. But because it's just like, you know, a 2002 Japanese movie, it just has that like V cinema sheen of like effective and evocative cheapness that I really like.
Yeah. And that like Tsukamoto is very good at doing really well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah. one of those movies that I was like, M does need to watch this at some point. So I'm glad that you did, even if it wasn't based on my recommendation.
I mean, I did remember you recommended it once I started it. So that counts for something. I get half credit.
Yeah. The seed was there.
The thing is, it's always better if I do forget, right? For me, just as the kind of person I am. Because if I go into this going like, oh, I'm watching this because I was told to watch it. Like, my friends really pressed me. Like, I'll do my best. But there's always the, like, the weird, like, feeling of the battle pressure of someone's expectations on you. And when I'd already clicked it and made my choice, like, this is what I'm going to watch, and realizing that you had told me to watch it still did not hit me with the battle pressure in the same way.
Yeah.
That's just how brains work sometimes.
This is why if I want you to, like, watch or read or whatever something, I'll just mention it to you, like, once or twice, and then I'm just done. Yeah. Right?
You have to come at me sideways. Like, it really is really annoying. I understand this.
I just gotta, plant the seed too of like, this is just a thing for you to check out someday. So someday when you're looking, you'll see it and be like, oh, maybe I'll watch this.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my general strategy now. So.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, there are still the cases where like, you are going to read Neighborhood Story, but also I'm going to strong arm you into doing a podcast about it.
I mean, so. I agreed to do it. I'm waiting for it to all be out. Like,
yeah.
I'm happy to do it. It gives me an excuse to read it all.
Yeah.
But recommending me things is always like a fucking arcane art. I have friends who are really good at it because they're not actually recommending things. They just talk with enthusiasm about things they're into and why they matter to them. And that always gets me. That'll pull me in every time. It's the pitch that I don't like.
Yeah.
My friend Kim has gotten me into so much shit, and most of it I've liked and some of it I haven't liked, but none of it has been because Kim is trying to get me into anything. Kim's just very enthusiastic about the things she likes.
Yeah.
And then other people pitch me all the time, and it never takes because I just don't like being pitched.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have other stuff? It seems like you had other stuff. So
I do have other stuff. Speaking of being pitched, last week I was talking a bit about fucked up movies that fuck you up. And the Discord helpfully chimed in was it last year? I'm going to look it up. 2022's horror film Terrifier 2 by Damien Leone. Multiple people said it was like the one that fucked them up. It was just too far. And I'd seen like images of it because I'm not super plugged into modern horror because I'm not plugged into modern anything basically. But I'd seen images of the clown, Art the Clown, who's the main guy. And I knew it had like a cult following. But didn't really know much about it, other than that. And people were like, oh, it's so fucked up. And I was like, okay, well, you tell me that, but I don't know if I never believe. Here's the thing. Immediately activate this thing that I said I was over last week, where I was like, you know, you tell me something's really fucked up. And I'm like, oh yeah, I don't believe you. I have to find out for myself. How fucked up can it be? Terrifier 2 is the sequel to Terrifier, but Terrifier itself is a elaboration of that character that was the first full-length movie with him in it is an anthology movie called All Hallows Eve, which like adapts a couple short films that Damien Leone did. He writes and directs all these movies. So it was All Hallows Eve, then Terrifier 2, and I watched all three of them, and all three of them are fucking terrible. They're bad movies. Damien Leone is a guy who... You don't watch a ton of horror, right? I don't feel like you're like a huge horror person.
Especially not really this vibe either.
No, but the main thing is like when you want, like this is true of all media, but I think horror movies and maybe anime and video games get it more than most. Maybe just because that's stuff I'm plugged into. Where it's like there's cultural misogyny as like a thing. It's like a low hum that exists in the world and you're always kind of tuned into it. And you know, ideally, if you pay attention to things and care about such stuff, you keep an ear out for it and you hear it and you're like, okay, this is like, it's missed these obvious things that it's bought into that are unfortunate or like hurt the work or maybe it just didn't hurt the work, but you just have to contend with there's this one glaring thing that sucks. And then every once in a while you come across a work, and you're like, the person who made this just doesn't like women very much. Like it's active. It's not the passiveness of culture. This person's just, this is part of their makeup is they just have some fucked up opinions. It might not even be active like misogyny, but like the noise is so loud suddenly in a way that's different. And that's how I feel about this man's three movies.
Yeah.
Because they're always like, and horror movies kind of, especially slashers, these are all slasher movies. always have culturally just the inertia of slashers is they're usually about imperiling women, young women. There's like the 80s slashers are all about like the moralism of these young women, want to have sex with their boyfriends and in doing so court the disaster that falls on them if someone comes and tries to murder them. That's like the traditional, like, you know, moralistic Reagan era slasher. But that vibe has just like been imbued through two generations of people growing up with those slashers into a horror movie. A slasher movie sometimes is about putting women in peril where they're just brutalized, cool kill gags with practical effects, and then that's it. And sometimes it goes like one step further where it's like, well, actually, it at the very end, it flips around and becomes girl boss, where we make the final girl really cool. And sometimes it doesn't. But I don't actually think that changes the actual mechanic of the thing that you're doing and the thing you're pulling from, which is there's an aesthetic to women being imperiled and murdered in horror cinema, just flatly.
Yeah.
That people really buy into. And so All Hallows Eve is like three shorts and a framing device that are all about women being kidnapped and murdered by this evil clown. Actually, the second one's a fucking alien. The second short in the anthology is about a weird alien. If you ever want to have a laugh about how stupid horror movies are, just look up All Hallows Eve Alien and be like, what the fuck? This thing's meant to be like scary in the middle of this horror anthology. It really, that was a bad, they're very badly written movies and badly directed. So I watched that one. I thought it was like a genuine waste of time, but it was like Sunday. And I was depressed. It was Sunday and I was depressed. And so I ended
up watching
Terrifier.
I just saw a picture of Evildoer, the All Hallows Eve alien.
Okay. Yeah.
Which apparently is named Evildoer.
I did not know that, but man, it's dumb looking, right? You see that? You're like, yeah. What is happening? Is this meant to be a comedy? And as far as I can tell, no.
I'm terrified of alien. Like they're my scare. They're the scariest like movie monster to me. Is a well done alien. This is not a scary alien.
Yeah. So Terrifier, I watched Terrifier. That was also really bad. It had like one good kill in it because he gets a little more of a budget. This one was like, I think this was the one that was financed on Indiegogo. And then it had like a producer came in to help like fund it. And there's a really good gag where a lady gets sawed in half and the saw gets like caught on her skull. He's sawing her. Sorry, I'm going to talk about horror gags. Apologies for this segment. If you don't want to listen, I don't really have much else after this. There's an email that I'm going to read about horror stuff, kind of. And then we're probably done because it's already 9:41. So sit this one out because the ones I'm going to talk about in Terrifier 2 might be a little more gruesome for people. But I do want to talk about how stupid I thought all that stuff was. And that was good. But like, it was also in just like the context of like. So he's an evil clown. And the whole thing is that he's just kind of like lol random, but murder about it. Where he's dressed in black and white, but he's got like bloody teeth and he's like a scary clown in the genre of scary clowns. And he just walks around with a trash bag, over his shoulder, like Santa or whatever. And all the movies take place on Halloween. So it's hard to say if this is like, so usually there's like an excuse of no one thinks it's weird. There's a clown around. Inside the bag, or if someone sees inside the bag, it's just like garbage. But also like rusty saws and chains with knives on them and just a bunch of horror movie bullshit. And he kind of just, he's silent. He doesn't talk and he shows up and he just like is in a scene and then menaces some girls and then he starts attacking them. With the goal of murdering, obviously, and he murders guys too, but like all the main characters are basically always women. But also, like, he does the thing where he's got a syringe full of something and he'll like inject people to like capture them and put them in his little saw rooms. Which I think is like leaning into a very different type of horror, which is like way more like, you know, kidnap and sexual assault horror is its own subgenre. And I feel like when you start doing that, you have to give it a little more weight. Like, you're dealing with things that actually happen to people.
Yeah.
You can't have a fucking weird murder clown. In the first movie, he basically is just like a recurring bit in each of the features. And there's no idea if he's like if he's supernatural or not. He injects people. There's an alien. So I guess it's supernatural, but the alien's not the clown. They're separate characters. But in the second movie, in Terrifier 1, he gets fucking murdered at the end. Actually, he shoots himself in the head. after taking a bunch of hits, it would probably kill someone, but that's normal. But, you know, he shoots his own head. And then Terrifier 2, he just wakes up and he, like, you know, he has a fucking hole in the back of his head and he's alive again. So clearly supernatural. But as I mentioned, shoots himself in the head. He has a fucking gun. He just has a revolver that, like when the heroines start getting one up on him, he just pulls out a gun and shoots them. There's, like, a bit in the first movie where in Terrifier, where the main girl is, like, who we think is the main girl for most of the movie, is, like, starting to beat the shit out of him with a big 2x4, and she's, like, you know, wailing on him. It's really weird because the scene is not foleyed correctly, so she's hitting him with this big piece of wood, but it's not making any noise, because these are fucking inept movies. And then he just takes out a gun and fucking shoots her, like, 3 times, and she's dead. The end. And even once he begins getting resurrected, he just has a gun sometimes. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? You can't have it all the 3 ways. These are 3 different horror characters. You've combined into one guy. He's just created, there's one of the reviews of Letterboxd of Terrifier 2, where it's like, this is like if an 11-year-old who hated women wrote a movie. And that's how I feel about all 3 of these movies. They just have a kid logic that makes no fucking sense to me and just, like, defies reason. And I guess that's probably why, like, a certain type of person really like the actual thing. We'll talk about it in a second. So, didn't like those.
Yeah.
But Terrifier 2 was, like, the one people, it's like, some people were like, oh no, this, like, the other ones are bad, but this one really pulls it out or whatever. It does not. But I gave it 2 stars as opposed to the 1 stars the other 2 got, because he's got a budget now, because the first one was kind of a cult classic. So he got some money to make the next one. And the things he spent that money on were upgrading the camera. So it didn't look like a weird fucking porn parody of anything. And, dumped all the money into practical effects, which he does himself. That part of the reason is the movies are like this because he's an effects guy who writes and directs his own movies. That's why they're dog shit, I guess. But he does know how to make a bloody thing look pretty good on screen. And so Terrifier 2 has, like, a bunch of really elaborate kills. And there's, like, this one where he, like, attacks this lady in her bedroom. It's, like, the one that everyone cites is, like, this was too far for people. There's, like, a story of, like, during one of the first screenings, like, a lady threw up in the audience. And if it happened, it probably happened in that one. I can't imagine it was anything else during that scene. And if I described what happened in that scene, you would not understand why it's... you would be like, that's really violent, but you wouldn't understand the ways in which it is just, like, really brutal and, like, but kind of ridiculous, and just really goes for, like, murdering someone in a way, in an aesthetic way that is a lot. I say this as someone who, like, I don't really like watching real violence in the world, right? Like, it makes me queasy, but since I grew up with horror movies, like, truly, none of this shit typically bothers me. I mostly think it's funny when you have a big bloody mannequin, right? Like, truly, it's not affected. I understand this is not everyone. Some people can't handle gore in their horror movies. That's not me. It doesn't bother me one bit, mostly. And this one didn't either. I was like, man, this one's really fucked up. I guess this is why people talk about this movie. And that happens. But then there's a scene later on. The reason I gave this 2 stars is the main girl is a high school student who loves cosplaying, and she's building a costume of, like, this, like, bikini warrior angel that her dad drew before he died of a brain tumor, like, the prior year. She has a little brother who's kind of mute, he's not mute. I was thinking of a different movie I watched recently. He's not mute. But he's, like, kind of, he's, like, acting out because their dad died, and he's, like, everyone thinks he's a creepy kid because he's really obsessed with the serial killer clown of Terrifier. Cause, like, you know, people knew that there's a clown killed a bunch of people the Halloween before, and then died. And then the mom, and so Art the Clown shoots the mom in the face, with a gun. Like I said, cheating. Don't like it. But the kid comes home, the boy, he's probably like 12, I guess. And he comes into the house, and, this is the one where, like, if you don't like gore, just skip ahead like 2 minutes. Where Art the Clown it's the mom's at the table, and her face is just, like, shot off, like, just gaping blood hole where her face is. And Art the Clown is, like, has a dinner laid out for the family to torment the family. Obviously, they come home and see their mom's dead. And the kid comes in, Art the Clown's, like, spooning up mashed potatoes, and he takes a big fist of mashed potatoes and just shoves it in the mom's, like, bloody face hole. And it's just, like, blood and mashed potatoes. Like, it's full on Evil Dead 2 happening in this moment. And I thought it was so fucking hilarious, I gave it an extra star. Because that's who I am. It's just gross. It's, like, gross in the way where all you can do, like, some people would find it, like, absolutely stomach turning, and I just had to laugh. I just, like, truly, like, against my better judgment, barked out a laugh, and I was like, yeah, you got me with that one. That one's pretty good. The rest of the movie, terrible. That the bikini warrior girl, who might be a high schooler, but is played by someone who's like in her late 20s. So you definitely know that there's a whole scene where she's in the shower and she gets her tits out because it's a horror movie. Even though she's meant to be a teenager, is like fated to fight the clown. Part of the reason her dad is gave her this idea for a costume and like left her a sword, like a fucking like fancy fantasy sword that she has on her dresser, is that he had this vision of her fighting Art the Clown and she would be the one to defeat him. And so she uses the sword, which like glows with weird energy, to cut off Art the Clown's head, which gets rid of him for this movie, even though there's a Terrifier 3 coming. And but none of it is like, it's not like lore. There's no like a lore about why. And it wouldn't make it better if there was. It just like shit happens the movie. Like some of the logical leaps in this movie remind me of like Heavy Metal, the animated film from the 80s,
yeah.
Which I do like, but like, it's just like, what's cool in this moment. And then you put it together and you make it work and you try to connect as best you can, but you don't worry too much about it. And I just don't, I think that's not a great way to make your movie sometimes, especially horror movies, which often rely on build and investment to make me care about anyone. I don't care about a fucking thing in Terrifier. I just watched it. And also, this movie, Terrifier 2, 138 minutes long. The worst
too
length
long.
The movie can be.
Yeah.
The other movies, like 80, 84 minutes, like that's fine. I'll watch anything for 84 minutes. Once you're over 2 hours, but you're not at 3 hours, you're in the dead zone of your movie better be fucking great, because like it's already too long and it's not like way too long where it might wrap back around again to really justifying itself as an act of cinema. No, it's just dog shit. I'm going to watch the third one, though. It's a Christmas movie, because the promotional pictures are Art the Clown dressed as Santa Claus. I'm like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
I'll watch it. I'll probably hate it, too. But I did watch it. I understand why people think it's, like, really fucked up. They are very mean-spirited, because, like I said, this is a guy who thinks he just seems to have a low opinion of women. One of the things about the movie is like, there's a lot of criticism about like, oh, these movies are kind of like weirdly gross about how they depict violence against women. And he took all of that criticism to heart. And that's why the main character of the Terrifier 2 is a cosplaying teen who's like fated to wield a sword and kill Art the Clown, because he was like, no, I'm making like a strong female character. I'm like, man, you've made like the joke. Remember, like,
yeah.
You know, the Tumblr comic of strong female characters. Yes.
Yeah.
Clown shit. Just exactly telling on himself by being like, this is my feminist pivot.
Yeah.
If you want a good version of this, watch Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, which is about the main character of Halloween 1, surviving Halloween 1. She's just fucked up about it. Because it's really bad to be in a horror movie. And like Rob Zombie is like an exploitation guy. He likes some dumb shit, but like, I think his movies are really smart about investing in characters. And I think his Halloween 2 is really good about the way in which she has to deal with having been through being a final girl. And her friends who also were final girls deal with they like multiple characters survived the first movie and they're all fucked up about it. And I think the first half hour of that movie is really good about that stuff. And yeah, these movies were fucking bad. But I did watch them because people told me I was the one that fucked them up. And it didn't do that to me. I was just kind of annoyed. However,
yeah.
However, the turn here, one of the movie franchises I watched last year that I fucking hated was the Ty West, like, Pearl trilogy or X trilogy. It was like X and then Pearl, and then Maxine comes out this year, starring Mia Goth, that some people really, they're again cult classics, way more like people like those than like Terrifier. If you look at the reviews of Terrifier, they're actually pretty mixed, and more people like Terrifier 2 than the other ones, but like Letterboxd like chart is very bottom heavy. You look at the X trilogy, the first two X movies, and it's way less that. There's way more people who are just think it's like brilliant cinema, and that shit is way more dog shit than Terrifier. I'd watch Terrifiers all day before I watch Ty West's third movie, though I will probably watch Maxine because I've already followed this road that far down. And sometimes you just get completionist brain about some shit you hate.
Yeah.
But that's my horror movie minute, because Jackson doesn't care about horror movies at all and doesn't like to hear about them. So give it to you instead, even though you don't really like horror movies. But it also follows on what we were talking about last week.
Yeah, and I like horror movies more than Jackson. I would not have gone on this Terrifier journey I have some friends who are, like, one friend in particular who's, like, big into Terrifier 2. So I've already seen stuff of it, and I'm just like, I don't entirely get it, but, you know, you do you.
It's not even, like, one, evil clowns are played, and there's so many better modern evil clowns. There's the clown in Hell House LLC.
It's a really bad evil clown design.
Yeah. I watched like, four of those. They're dog shit, too, but, like, they're normal dog shit. Like, I have no overarching complaint about the Hell House LLC franchise. I'll watch more if they make more. They're bad. There's Rob Zombie's House of Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. I had Sid Haig as I don't remember what the clown's name is, and it's been a while since I've watched those. That's a good evil clown. Sid Haig's now dead, but fantastic character actor mostly from the 70s. Got a career resurgence by Rob Zombie making him be an evil clown. Good evil clown. Pennywise, of course. I was so afraid of Pennywise the clown as a kid because I watched the It miniseries way too young. I spent like multiple years of my childhood because there's a scene where Pennywise comes through the like school shower drain. He like pulls it open like it's a fucking cartoon, like the hole in the drain. He pulls it open and like comes up like torso out because he lives in the sewers to menace this child. And I was so afraid that like a clown was going to come out of the shower drain for years as a kid.
Yeah.
Didn't have nightmares. I never had nightmares, but every time I took a shower, it was like in the bath. I took baths instead of showers until I became basically just like a tween. Because I was like, if I took a shower, the clown's going to get me. But somehow that wouldn't happen in the bath. the child logic. But yeah, there's plenty of evil clowns. Yeah. It's a medieval clown. Like I said, if you're a real gore hound, you probably already seen it. I think the effects are probably worth sitting through the rest of it. If that's a thing you care about, like it's a movie that feels made for one of those, like Shudder or Bloody Disgusting Talking Heads documentaries about like, oh, the 50 greatest kills of the 21st century so far. And like some people who don't matter talk around the shots that you care about in a movie. And there's going to be multiple shots from Terrifier in the one of those documentaries at some point. But that doesn't make it a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Discord, it's your fault that I wasted 5 hours of my life watching those movies.
You did it like all in one night too.
I did it all. Yes, yeah. I watched the first two, and then I recorded with Dia for Boku no Natsu Yatsumi 2, and then I watched the third one. I wasn't meaning to, but I chipped a tooth last week, and I had the dentist appointment on Monday, and I was worried about it. It turned out to be mostly fine, and some other stuff was going on in my life that I'm saving for VoIP Life. I'll talk about it. VoIP Life, actually, the VoIP Life will be out in 2 days as you're listening to this. Not like bad, just stuff that was on my, like,
yeah.
If I have things going on, I get anxious, and then if I'm anxious, I don't sleep. This is just my cycle, and then when I'm feeling bad, I tend to just do things like this where I'm not going to be invested. It's not a huge, like, I can throw one day at some bad movies and then never think about it again. Outside of getting some podcast content out of it. And that's what I did. But yeah, I didn't intend to watch all three of them in one day. It's just sometimes your Sundays go really bad like that.
Yeah.
It was fun. You know, sit down and watch some bad movies. There's an All Hallows Eve 2, but it doesn't have Art the Clown in it. It's like a weird pumpkin murderer. I probably won't watch that one unless someone has a good reason why I should. But I will watch Terrifier 3 because I'm a dumbass.
Yeah,
I don't know. Horror movies are the one thing where, like, even the bad ones, I'll watch them. I'll just keep watching them. I like horror movies a lot. I watched The Pope's Exorcist. That was also fucking bad. But, like, in normal, very normal Hollywood ways, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I do feel like my closest to you with horror movies is just like Yakuza movies, but
yes,
I also feel like I burn out on Yakuza movies faster than, like, I would not do three mid to bad Yakuza movies in a night, normally, even if I had the time.
Normally I would not, to be fair. Yeah. This was a kind of a special occasion.
You know, even something like Red Peony Gambler, that is something, like, when I watched it, I was not watching it all in a week or something. It was like, oh, I'll watch the next one. It's been, like, a month, you know?
This is like how I watched Rise of Skywalker when I had a fever of, like, 103. And that's, like, the only way one should watch Rise of Sky. It was, like, I didn't watch in theaters. It was, like, I was just homesick one day and, like, truly sick, just in bed, like, fucking, I'm, like, I need to push fluids and sleep, and I can't sleep right now because I just am, like, in the sweats period of having fevers, and just watch Rise of Skywalker. And I was, like, that was still a waste of my time, even though I'm busy dying right now.
Yeah. When I'm like that and I am watching something and I'm not just, like, asleep in bed, I always just watch the original Star Wars trilogy and Aliens.
See, I just like throw myself at garbage, new garbage. I like novelty more than I like revisiting stuff in those moments.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is that I just enjoy falling asleep very early in a movie and waking up towards the end and just knowing what's happening because it's like, yeah, I watched this a bunch as a kid when I'm sick. Although truly my bigger thing when I'm sick is, I enjoy just like being in bed and playing like a game where like, you know, like an RPG or something where it's like, there's not some sort of time thing. So if I just pass out in the middle of playing it, it's fine. Or just like reading something, you know, you just like fall asleep with a book on your chest. That's good when you're sick.
I don't think I've ever done that. I mean, maybe as a kid, but not since I was a kid.
Yeah. I've done that a few times. One time, my wife, Emily, came in and found I had fallen asleep in bed reading Nana and then took a photo to make fun of me. So, yeah. Well,
I have an email.
Oh, an email.
Yeah. Rez from the Discord wrote in, about the thing last week about things of, or 2 weeks ago, things fucked you up. The movie that generally got to Rez is The Conjuring. There are caveats here, but the scene where the female ghost crouched atop the wardrobe staring at the lead messed me up. Why? Because I had that exact wardrobe in my bedroom. And until recently it was in the same orientation as well. Yeah. That would get me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would fuck me up. Conjuring, I've seen, but I remember it being okay. I think I watched that in theaters and thought it was okay. And then like, it's one of those where the next day you're like, I was being bamboozled by being in a theater. It's not that good.
Yeah.
Generally unnerving things, any media that involves spirits, intruders, whatever, being by your bed is when you're sleeping or when you wake up. Screws me up every time. Also, regarding the woods, forests will always be beautiful during the day and terrifying at night. Tales old as time. Unrelated to that, but moths. Scary. We must have talked about moths? Did you talk about... It must have been you, because I wouldn't talk about moths. Yeah, was mentioning cedar balls to get rid of the moths.
Yeah, so we have a bunch. One, we got, like, some cedar hangers, and we also have a bunch of, like, rings, so you can, like, put them on a hanger or, like, in a box or whatever, like, that you're storing stuff in. So we do have those. The thing is they're good at like repelling the moths, but when you have a lot of moths, then it's like not quite as effective. So when you like have an active moth thing happening, it's not as useful, but, cause it's more just like, they don't like the scent. It's not like it's toxic to them or something. So, I know there are like the moth balls that you can like, will like actually kill them. But they are also not good for humans to inhale. And if you're just going to like put it in your closet and you don't go in there very often, it should be okay. But I record podcasts in my closet, so we can't do that. Or I'd have to find another solution, but, also supposedly can melt plastic, the like moth stuff, moth balls that are like the actual pesticide. Also, we have cats, which is, makes it harder too, because they'll like go and sleep in the closet or whatever too. Because cats are just weird; they just sleep weird places. But yeah, I would not say that the our moth problem is over, but like we've done all the stuff, and it's now it's just like general maintenance, checking in. Like, we also have moth traps, so, like, seeing if the moths are showing up there, if we see, like, moths flying around in our apartment. Because occasionally we'll see one. I think sometimes they might be, like, on the move looking for something. But it's definitely been better. So. The part that sucks is that, like, I knit a little bit. There's definitely a period where I knit a lot, and Emily knits constantly. Like, most nights, she's just knitting and watching TV. And we knit a lot with wool, and moths just fucking love wool. So, you know, the expensive natural fibers, they go nuts for. So, but now all that stuff has been, like, baked in case there was anything, like, any eggs or something. You know, checked, like, lint rolled. Bagged up. We're checking the bags because sometimes they can bite through the bags, I guess. Yeah. So, whole process, but it's in a decent spot now. Which is nice because it was just a thing that I was spending evenings on. And I'm hoping to have regular evenings where I just do stuff. But unless I'm talking about Blue Period, that's, I think, it.
Yeah, one more thing. In the Discord, we had a listener of the show, Cass, who's also a VTuber. Basically, the intersection of all of our interests is Cass, who is the one who I feel like talks about our episodes the most. So thanks, Cass. At Sweetgrass Cass on the CASS on Twitter, if you want to see their VTuber model or whatever, check them out on Twitch. Talking about... when we were talking about being afraid of the woods, Cass is raised by a bushcraft weirdo, their words, not mine. And just was like, I just, when I'm in the woods, I just think about how you turn, vines into fibrous plants into like lashings. And when I'm ever in a place with like people and buildings, I'm afraid of it, which, very funny to me. Could not be me.
I do find like woods during the day pleasant. You know, as long as I'm not like deep in the woods where I don't know my way out, but just like, you know, general woods during the day, pleasant. At night, if it's familiar woods and I like can clearly see the way to like civilization, you know, like a road or something, I feel okay. But yeah, also just the difference between woods at night versus woods during the day.
I'm gonna be honest, I think woods of the day are also a little scary. I mean, I like the woods, don't get me wrong, woods are fine if I'm at a place where like I know how to get back, whatever. But there's something scary about especially woods that are big enough where it's like this might as well be endless. Like if you told me that these trees go forever and we're all gonna die in here, I'd believe you in this moment because I have no evidence to the contrary.
Since I did grow up in a more suburban / rural area throughout like high school, I'm a little bit more familiar with the woods. I did just regularly walk through the woods to get home all the time.
I didn't grow up in a Calvin and Hobbes strip. I just lived in the suburbs.
I would get out of school and I would walk through the woods and across like an express, not like a full expressway, but like a busy, you know, a highway in terms of like, these are also weird because there's like regional variations, but like highway where it's like 55 miles per hour, you know? To get home. And then we moved and, there's even more woods that I would walk through to get home. And then anytime that I would go to and from church, if I was not riding in the car with my parents, there was like woods where like you would drive like around like in a U shape to get to the church, but like the church and the parsonage were like spatially very close to each other, but there was just woods in between. So there's a path that you could walk between the house and the church to get there pretty quickly. It was like slightly longer than driving, but not that much longer. So most of the time I would just walk through the woods. In fact, to mow our lawn, I would have to walk through the woods, get the riding mower, and then I would re-mow the path on the way to our lawn to mow the lawn when I was in high school. So we just used the church mower. That's what being a parsonage kid is about.
Okay.
And I got high in those woods many times. Many times. I got very high in those woods. So... and definitely walk through a lot at night, but
I could not imagine being high in the woods. I think I would probably die instantly. No, thank you.
I mean, when I was getting high in the woods, it was not that deep into the woods, you know?
Okay. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I have trouble like navigating YouTube when I'm high. I'm not going to be in the woods.
On a stairwells, I told the story of the initiation of doing the pack of Newports, buying a pack of Newports. And that was like right on the like in the woods, but right on the edge of like not in the woods. So, yeah. I still find the, I find the woods, like my ranking is like city is not scary. Woods kind of scary. Just rural houses horrifying to me.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm alone in a fucking house and there's like, I have to like travel to get to a neighbor. Fuck this.
Yeah, no, that's always the worst.
Yeah.
All right. I guess we're actually done now.
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
You can find me at Foxomnia on Twitter and also anything else that I'm on. But Twitter is like the main social media thing that I actually post on. If you go there, you will find in my pinned tweet links to all of my podcasts, which obviously includes this one, but also Ornate Stairwells, which we've mentioned multiple times. Pondering Putan, if you want to hear the full story of me, doing a secret handshake with Hatsune Miku, and Ghost Divers, where I'm done reading Nana. I've recorded all of that, but the final discussion episode is coming up. I mean, the question bucket's still coming up, but that's, I don't have to prep for question buckets. You know, just reading emails, yeah, answering them.
That's fair.
Then we're going to do Psycho Pass the movie. So I'm excited for that. And then
finally.
I think that's it. I don't really have, I guess the episodes of me on Coffee and Comic Books, one of them is out and the other one is coming out soon, I think. So, we talked about Cages, a comic that I really liked when I was like in middle school or whatever when I read it, and does not entirely hold up, but it was still fun to reread. So, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @EM_being. If you'd like to listen to most of my podcasts, they're at abnormalmapping.com. When you're listening to this, one, Blockbusters will be out, about Crocodile Dundee. Find that at our Patreon, patreon.com/normalmapping for $5. I hope that's good. I haven't watched Crocodile Dundee yet. That's tomorrow's problem. Hopefully that'll be good. And, next month we're watching, Pirates of Silicon Valley. Dia's coming through for that. So that'll be fun. Breaking format a little bit because that's a made for TV movie, but. So it goes. If you're listening to this when it comes out or the day after or whatever, send questions, because this weekend we're recording both Abnormal Mapping on Mystery Exile and the Repertory screenings on, I think it's called Don't Look Now. Is that what we'll be doing next?
I think so.
Yeah. You know, we always like emails. Emails are good. I'm always worried, especially when we have two on one week, that like Reptile Screens is going to get like two emails. Thank you to the people who always write in, but always like a little more emails. Watch me and Dia play My Summer Vacation 2. We're like in the back half of that. Listen to me and Nora talk about Aragon books at Dragon Readers and exportaud.io. There probably is a new episode like the day this drops, drops Monday night. I always forget when this podcast comes out. This drops Monday night. Me and Nora are recording Tuesday, and then that episode will probably be out Wednesday or Thursday about the first fourth of Inheritance, the fourth and final book to date of the Inheritance cycle until he writes more of them, and Nora makes me come back out of guilt. We're getting there. So, yeah. I think that's all of my stuff. We're also watching Gundam Unicorn.
Yeah.
probably the one everyone cares about.
If people don't want spoilers for episode 3 of Gundam Unicorn, stop listening now. I'll give them a slight different, another moment. Stop listening. You're also on GGP being wrong. I was right. Mario Cruz is plot 12. Also, I have no faith that it's going to do any of the backstory stuff.
I mean, I already think it didn't. So
yeah, it's already not looking great.
Have you listened to GGP this week?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I think there's the potential for good storytelling there, but I don't think these OVAs are going to do it.
I think you even say this in the episode. If you got this little glimpse in, like, an episode of, like, a 50-episode anime, right?
Yeah.
You're like, okay, next episode they're going to come back and they're going to talk about this a little bit more. They're not going to do it when there's only four OVA episodes left.
Yeah.
And if they were going to do more about it, they would have done it in the episode where they brought it up. You know?
Yeah.
They had the time to do it. They weren't doing anything else. They were just saying the same shit again. And cool fights.
Cog in a machine. I'm a cog in a machine. We're all cogs and machines.
Yes. Oh, I'm dying beautifully as a cog in a machine.
Even this cog in a machine has a heart. Stupid. Stupid episode of anime.
It'd be cool if it was developing anything than it did in the first episode, but...
Tell me about it. Who knows? I mean, OVAs are so fucking weird. It could be fine. It could pull it all out, or it could be garbage. It could just go down the tubes more and more every week. Either of them are equally possible to me, so...
Yeah. I don't think it's gonna pull this one out. There's only 4 weeks of it left, so, like... Yeah, sure, let's do this.
We'll be talking about Cao Cao in like 2 months. It'll be great.
Yeah.
Less than 2 months.
But yes, I was right. She was a plug glow.
You were right. No, I didn't believe you, and you were right. That's correct.
So I had to glow, especially because you didn't formally acknowledge like an amazing, on the episode.
It's an amazing called shot. Because I was like, nah, come on.
That one shot in particular where she's got the hat on. And so it's just like the front hair pulled. I was like, I see what you're doing here.
I mean, when you put them side by side, I get it, but I just wasn't feeling it. But no, you were right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're done. I'm going to go and, hopefully go to bed before midnight. We'll see. And I hope you have a good night also. And you listener, if it's the day, don't go to bed. You're probably driving or at work. So please stay awake for a little while longer.
Yeah.
But if you are falling asleep, good night. Until next week, we're out of the podcast.
And then we are out of the podcast.
It's just one of those days when you don't want to wake up. Everything is fucked. Everybody sucks. You don't really know why, but you want to justify ripping someone's head off. No human contact. And if you interact, your life is on contract. Your best bet is to stay away, motherfucker. It's just one of those days. It's all about the he says, she says bullshit. I think you better quit. Let shit slip, or you'll be leaving with a fat lip. It's all about the he says, she says bullshit. I think you better quit talking that shit. It's just one of those days, feeling like a freight train. First one to complain, leaves in the bloodstain. Damn right, I'm a maniac. You better watch your back, cause I'm fucking up the program. And if you're so stuck up, and you're locked up, it's in line to get fucked up. Your best bet is to stay away, motherfucker. It's just one of those days. It's all about the he says, she says bullshit. I think you better quit, let shit slide. Or you'll be leaving with a fat lip. It's all about the he says, she says bullshit. I think you better quit talking that shit. So come and get it. I feel like shit. My suggestion is to keep your distance, cause right now I'm dangerous. We've all felt like shit and been treated like shit. All those motherfuckers that wanna step up. Chainsaws. And if my day keeps going this way, I just might break something tonight. I'm back a chainsaw. Just give me something to bring. Get it.